It's 3.78 units per acre. You can see the property's got the dark blue zoning there, and that stands for PUD. And then to the north, you can see some DPX zoning, and then to the west, southwest, and northwest, we have single-family zoning. Currently, it's designated for the PUD with 142 multifamily units, and it's proposed for 108 single-family homes. This is the master plan that goes with the development agreement proposed drawn by the applicant's consultants. You can see there's a central lake, there's a road that goes around the lake, and there's two access points. There's also a clubhouse off the main entrance right on the be the west side of this central lake. And on the very east side of the project, you can see the city lake, and there's boat docks shown out there on the city lake. And this is a little more detail of what's going on. And some of these things in this land swap, they're in the same agreement. However, they're really not part of the zoning request. For instance, you can see the 11-acre site for stormwater. We got it noted, it's not part of the rezoning, but it's going to be excavated by the applicant. Additionally, the applicant is providing two other parcels to the city. One on the north side of the project, it's a 25-foot wide drainage area, and it's two-thirds of an acre. And also on the south side of the property, you can see the note where it says excavation for new canal. So the applicant would dredge this canal, and at the very west end as it approaches Laramie Drive, then they would just rough grade a kayak and canoe launch facility. And so part of the things in exchange, the city is giving the applicant the 1.97 acre piece. So the sharing part or the land swap is really I believe that decision is a little bit more towards what the city council. So we're really not here to say, oh, this is a good deal for the city or not. That's really a policy decision. Some of the key site development standards that people might be interested in, the first two categories on minimum lot size, minimum lot width, those do not apply to a condominium. But they would apply to townhouses. And minimum lot size today is 3,000 square feet. They're proposing to have minimum 6,000 square foot lots for the single family homes. The minimum lot width would increase from 40 feet to 50 feet. The minimum front setbacks, there's no change. There's no change also on the minimum open space. The maximum building heights for a townhouse, there's no change from that of 35 feet to the single-family homes. The condos are allowed to go to up to 50 feet, and so there's a little bit of decrease if they for the condominium part. Additionally, on the maximum density, there's about a 20% reduction from about 5 units an acre to about 3.8 units per acre. As part of the rezoning process, the applicant's required to, for public participation, and hold a neighborhood information meeting. The applicant mailed out the notices of all the properties within 300 feet of the boundaries of the rezoning, mailed this on August 25th for a meeting that was held at Matanzas High School cafeteria on September 9th, and 21 persons attended that meeting. Staff is required to review rezoning applications based on five specific criteria of the Land Development Code, more specifically in section 2.0505, and there's five paragraphs, the first being A, the proposed development must not be in conflict with or contrary to the public interest. And staff's determination was we found the proposed MPD with single-family SFR-1 lot standards to be compatible with the surrounding zoning properties that have SFR-2, SFR-3, and DPX or duplex zoning. Paragraph B, the criteria is the proposed development must be consistent with the provisions of the Land Development Code and comprehensive plan. The staff found it met all applicable portions of the Land Development Code and comprehensive plan. And the two main ones, the density is within the 2 to 7 dwelling units per acre range, and since there's over 50 homes in the proposed project, it would have to have 2 access points onto a public roadway, which would be Laramie Drive. The third criteria is the proposed development must not impose a significant financial liability or hardship for the city. Staff determined, various staff members looked at this, that the infrastructure is in place for the project, except that a sewer force main is located to the southeast of the project, and the applicant's engineer would need to design that, and his contractor would need to build that at the applicant's cost. Additionally, as part of the trade for the docks and the land that the city's getting, the applicant will actually excavate the city 11-acre parcel, which will improve stormwater and flood control situations in the Matanzas Woods neighborhood. Fourth criteria is the proposed development must not create an unreasonable hazard, nuisance, or constitute a threat to the general health, safety, and welfare of the city's inhabitants. And in this case, the proposed single-family community at a maximum density of 3.78 units per acre will be in harmony with the surrounding single-family and duplex homes. The last criteria is the proposed development must comply with all other applicable local, state, and federal laws, statutes, ordinances, regulations, and codes. And specifically, as it goes through the development process, which is really just starting, they'll have to comply with the city's land development code, which is very thorough, the comprehensive plan, and all other requirements of other applicable state and federal agencies. Planning staff recommends that the planning board recommend approval to City Council to rezone 28.60 acres from PUD for multifamily uses to MPD for single family uses for Matanzas Land MPD application number 3112.
Thank you, Mr. Hoover.
And we do have a presentation by the applicant, Mr. Chairman.
Excellent.
Yeah, I'll pull yours up.
Chairman, member of the board, my name is Jim Cullis. I'm a partner and the manager of Matanzas Land. I have very simple, a few slides to show you. Mr. Hoover, I think, covered very well. We've worked with partner and staff for over a year to bring this project to you. And you know, we think it's a really nice opportunity to build a very nice neighborhood in here. If you, this first slide is really the prior project. This property is 28 acres. We have a square. There's not a lot of things you can do from a landscaping standpoint. It really just kind of wants to have a big lake in the middle and then have the homes go around the lake. We have an advantage on our project to have a large stormwater lake to the east, and we'll have a canoe and kayak to the south. But this project was townhomes and condominiums, so all townhomes and condominiums, a lot of character with the Tampa Bay. So we proposed 50-foot home sites in here. show you some neighborhoods in Grand Haven that we've done that are on 50-foot home sites, and we've got a beautiful community. The second slide is the artist rendering of what we're proposing to do. And single-family home sites, we like the idea of coming to the main entrance and having a community amenity and a nice park, a nice building. We'll have architectural standards. In the community meeting we had, there was a lot of concern about having rentals in here and transient rentals and things. We have a pretty standard rental restriction that we use in Grand Haven that we intend to use here, and it does allow transient rentals, allows you to rent your home two or three times a year for no less than a month, so it's really not going to be a place that's going to generate a lot of resort traffic or transient traffic. We think that's a good rental standard. We'll have an architectural review committee. We'll have a set of architecture standards that people are required to meet for review of homes and as we work through this process. Next slide. There is a park that is being dedicated to the city for canoe and kayak. The city's Parks and Recreation and their staff will determine what goes in there. We're required to give you land, but this is just one concept. I think it is intended, it's a concern by the residents that this is a place that there'll be a lot of, you know, noise at night and lights and things like that. I can't tell you what the city's going to put there, but I think the discussions and the vision for it is a pretty vast park where you can launch a canoe and a kayak and a kayak out to. We took people back one. You'll be able to come down our southern border here and kayak out to this lake, but it's connected to this lake, really, Stormwater Lake, is really an expansion of the Belter Canal and Belter Parkway Canal. And that canal is a significant canal, and opportunities for canoeing and kayaking from there are pretty good. So, again, we like the community in that it has a lot of water views on both the interior and the south side and the east side. So I think you're going to find that over half of our home sites in here have some water view or not. So I hope that lends to people like having a view of water in the backyard. Next slide. Again, this shows the land plan. You've seen this. The neighbors were a little concerned about the density. Would have liked to have seen larger home sites in there. And the neighborhood has about 2,500 home sites, and they're almost all 80-foot lots. So we wanted to come up with a little differentiation of project, a product out there. I don't think you need more 80-foot lots or 70-foot lots. I think the idea of a planned community with 50-foot patio homes where the yards are maintained by the homeowners might appeal to a little bit more of an empty nest or retirement buyer. Okay. Next. There is a land trade here, 1.97 acres. I actually tried to buy it some years ago and couldn't get past Bank of America. Instead of selling it to me, they were giving it to the city. This is what ended up happening. It's 1.97 acres. If you look at the land we're giving in exchange, the canal to the south and the canoe and kayak waterway, it's over 3 acres. So we're giving you more acres than you're giving us. And we're assuming responsibility to dig the storm water lake in the back. I mean, that's somewhat self-serving. You know, it's going to create some great views for us. But it also, this is a neighborhood that has some flooding problems. This is a series of slides. Our 50-foot lots in Grand Haven, I think we have 5 different neighborhoods. It's actually almost 25% of our entire housing offering in Grand Haven. It's a product that really is attractive to folks who just don't want to take their yard. They're downsizing into these homes in Grand Haven are anywhere from 1,500 foot to 2,500, 2,600 feet. Next, this just gives you an example of what it might look like from the water. This is Harris. Heritage Oaks, one of the later projects we built. This one had a tile roof, some paver drives. One of our first neighborhoods was Leaside East, Leaside West. Clint Smiling, I think he probably did the engineering on that. If you keep going to just give you an idea of what the product is. We also built Village Oaks, one of our very first neighborhoods, after Leaside. Again, it's put lots trail-oriented community. You know, we'll have the bicycles and the trails associated here. And again, a little street view of what this looks like. I think probably one or two more shots here. One more after this. Again, you know, we like the fact that there's an interchange close now. I think that's going to bring a lot of make it easier to get to this community from people commuting from Jacksonville, St. Augustine. It's a neighborhood of a product that is not there right now, but it's not condominiums and townhomes with a lot of folks, especially in the center, that don't have that idea. We're excited about doing it. It has nothing to do with the golf course. But we think more happy to answer any questions that people have.
Thank you, sir.
Why
don't we start from this end? Mike, do you have any questions for the applicant or the planning staff? Jake?
No, I don't.
No, sir.
What kind of feedback have they received from the adjacent communities in terms of reception?
The neighborhood meeting, kind of feedback did you get?
At the neighborhood meeting, folks are used to seeing an empty parcel here. They'd rather see nothing. That's fair. They'd rather see, if we did anything, they'd rather see larger single-family lots. There's still enough traffic in this neighborhood. There was some representation that maybe the city was going to give turn the two-way to the site into a park, which I wasn't really aware of. But if that happened or not, they are getting a canoe and kayak park that's larger than 2 acres. The advantage of this, too, is that city actually didn't have access to their acres in the back, and the land we're getting will give them continuous access back and forth. I think that traffic was the main concern. We are down zoning this from the previous plan from 142 units to our plan actually has 104 units on it. You know, the engineering some come along a little farther since we did the concept plan. Concept plan 108, we got 104. I think we're done with that. If that's important to drop down a little lower zone, we will. When you run the traffic numbers, it's pretty much a wash. The multi-family, generate quite as much traffic as single family, but we have less. So I think what the uses in the park were concerned to neighbors. A lot of capital liked the idea of having a park, the other half didn't like the idea of having a park at all, so how maybe that was conclusive. They were concerned about what it's going to look like from Laramie, and we have a 25-foot Class A buffer along there, and we'll do some fencing. There'll be security here. There'll be transit rentals were a big issue, and we've committed to do rental restrictions and prevent transit rentals. So, they're here tonight, I believe,
someone,
so
you're first hand. Sybil,
that's
your question.
Mm-hmm. Clint? I have a couple questions. One for Mr. Hoover. You mentioned the kayak launching site would be graded. So is the developer deeding that site to the city and grading it? Or did
yes.
I hear that wrong?
Right.
They are,
so
okay.
Before they deed it over, they would dig the South Canal out. And then they just put the grade on there so you can walk down and put a canoe kayak in. And then the city, it's up to the city and obviously city council on what actually gets put in that park.
Are they constructing the roadway through? That's your second entry. So you construct the roadway through. Okay. And then one for Mr. Cullis. Under the current plan, actual approved plan that has townhomes, would you say they would be predominantly two-story?
As a townhome.
And under your single-family 50-foot lot, that more than likely they would be predominantly one-story?
I'd say almost over 90% of our homes are single-home.
Okay, thank you.
Ben?
Is there going to be any head walling done? Is there going to be any head walling done, especially at your boat slips and stuff?
Bulkhead, you mean?
Bulkhead.
Oh, I don't know the answer to that. We haven't got that far yet with all the grading and the engineering to determine whether it's going to be any bulkhead or not. It's not our plan at this point. I mean, these docks are for canoes and kayaks and small sailboats and jolly boats. So I don't think that having there's actually a strip of land between the back of our locks and the water's edge so that the city can bring a piece of equipment. So we'll have to deal with that to maintain the lake edge.
This water isn't tidal and there's no power boats on it.
No power boats.
Yeah.
The other thing is, what about street lighting? And the utilities will be underground?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Chris?
Yes, sir. The access to the proposed retention pond in the rear, what's that approximate width, that narrow strip?
That is 80 feet.
8 feet?
80 feet.
80 feet?
Yeah. So it gives you room, again, to have a trail along that edge for maintenance. The actual water's edge for that is designed and engineered for it. So
those homes that will have frontage along that 80-foot strip, will there be a fence?
We have the ability to put a fence up there. I anticipate putting up a 4-foot looping railing back in the fence.
And you probably only need 25 feet for access. Are you going to put a natural buffer between the homes on the northerly side of that strip?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's both on the north side and on the south side, which is a buffer requirement that makes the city's buffer city.
No other questions.
It seems to be good. Just flip back one chart, Bill, please, if you will. Is the difference? No, that isn't the one. One of the. One more. Now I don't see it. It doesn't make any difference. The two entrances, one is going to be adjacent to this kayak canoe launch, and the other one is going to be on more or less down in the center of the property where the community building is, the community center is?
Yes.
Okay. Now, this is a question for Mr. Hoover. It's my understanding that if we were not to approve this, then Mr. Cullis and his partners would be free to build the 140-unit townhomes that are two-story and single-family, right? That was approved in 2005. So the choices are this density, which is much lower, or the much higher density. Am I right?
Yes, sir. It would revert back to the previous zoning.
Yep.
With a time frame, and it would be PUD, and that's what was approved.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. I don't have any other questions. So why don't we open it up to questions from the public. If you'd like to speak, please approach the podium. Please state your name and address for the record. If you have any questions or comments or anything in general, you just approach the podium. You're welcome to. Yes, right there, right where Mr. Cullis was.
My name is Teresa Langham.
Oh, ma'am, you'll need to turn around. We need to hear you.
I'm so sorry. My name is Teresa. I live at 104 Lindsay Drive.
Okay.
Ma'am, I'm sorry. If the podium has a microphone.
Turn it around.
Hey, Bill, so you can get right in front of the microphone right there. And when people speak, you can get right in front. There's no mic, but it's hidden. So, but you got to get right in
yes,
front.
Yes, we can.
Yeah. My name is Teresa Legum. I live at 104 Lindsay Drive, right where Mr. Cullis is putting this. His buildings, his houses. lived there for 8 years now. We have an outstanding wildlife in our area. We have owls, we have deers, we have birds. We have people who really love their homes there. We have citizens there that care about what happens. This is not what we want in our backyard. This is truly not what we want. I don't want to wake up every morning and look out my door, my back door, and see this. I've already spoken to my husband about perhaps putting the home up for sale and moving out of Flagler County. We have three other homes in different counties, my husband and I. We can go ahead and move to one of those and give this up. Some of our neighbors that I've spoken with are extremely displeased, extremely displeased about what's going on. And I understand that the golf course has been left to rot for years and years and years. But we're asking you, as citizens, don't let Mr. Collins do this. Please don't let Mr. Collins do this. Please save our homes. Save our golf course. If we have to pay more in taxes to have something maintain it, we will do that. We will do that as homeowners. We want this kept the way it is. And we understand that you have the final say-so, along with Mr. Cullis. But we're not going in without a fight to save our homes and to save our property. With all due respect, Mr. Cullis, we will give you a fight. We want to save our home. Either that or we'll put our homes up for sale. And we will move out of Flagler County. And then Mr. Cullis can have that. I appreciate the time. It's a very, very emotional thing for us to have to put our homes up for sale and to move. But there's a lot of people here that I'm sure feel the same way. We don't want to wake up to that every day. We want the peace that we spent our hard-earned money to wake up to every morning, and that's a golf course that was supposed to be taken care of when they bought it. Thank you so much.
Good evening. My name is Eric Josie. I reside at 86 Lindsay Drive. I reside at 1 of Boston, Kansas. I must concur with the previous speaker. We wholly object to this project in whole or in part. I have been in Palm Coast since 2003. My home is brand new built in 2006. So I actually live on the golf course itself. Mr. Cullis may recognize me as a community leader in that area of Matanzas from his former project on a golf course that didn't go down. But I remain the community leader in that area since then. So I'm in more contact with all of my neighbors from Lake View area, the other side of London, and the whole area, particularly where I'm concerned about where I live, on Lindsay Drive, which connects with Laramie Drive. There's a couple of points I want to raise about this issue. First, through process of notice. We have not received any notice. We have not received any mail. My wife, on a happen chance, happened to notice a armed sign near the home, the mysterious home that disappeared on top of the hill, Laramie Drive. There's a shabby notice, and that's the groom's first given notice. And subsequently, this meeting was adjourned to today. So we have not received any mailing whatsoever. Anybody that I spoke to have not received any mailing whatsoever in regards to this meeting, in regards to this project. So I took it upon myself to take a photo of the notice and give notice to our members in our community, and I suspect that some of them are here. The other issue is in regards to traffic. I'm very familiar with Laramie Drive. I just think this project is just completely outrageous. I see no way the two access or egress points that this project has is on Laramie Drive. It's the only two for 180 homes. I just don't see how this feasibly possible. I suggest that this project at least be tabled for further examination. I suggest that a traffic survey be taken on Laramie Drive, which is the main vein to that section. There's very few egresses from that section of that area of Lindsay Drive. And Laramie is the main vein to the artery, which I consider to be Montana's Parkway. Since the exits have opened up on Montana's Parkway, we noticed that there's an identifiable increase in traffic in that area. Kids going to the school bus have been nearly struck or struck on Laramie Drive, so at least no one or two incidents I know of on Laramie Drive in that area. I'm familiar with this area. I passed it several times since I finally was made aware of this incident or this project. And I just do not see at all how they can squeeze 180 homes. Well, I think Matanzas neighborhood is a compromising people. We're willing to listen. But as it stands now, 180 homes in that area with the only two egress points on Tyree Drive, which should be outrageous. We already had two incidents on I-95 where there were fatal accidents, and all of 95 traffic was completely diverted onto Matanzas. We were unable to escape from our residence for almost 2 hours from traffic being diverted onto Matanzas from 95 to US 1. My other issue is in regards to this other vacant property. There's other vacant properties in the area that's just now coming to back, are coming into fruition. People are slowly buying homes in that area. If you take into consideration the single homes that they're planning for, 180 homes, in consideration of the vacant lots and the homes that's already coming back, we're speaking about almost 260 homes in that small area. I'm just talking about 180 over here, and the vacant lots, so people are now buying homes slowly, at least at economic situation is starting to come back a little bit. This vacant lot that people are looking to purchase homes on, that has to take into consideration in math when you're talking about this project. I concur with my resident here with loss of habitat and green space. I mean, we have a great wildlife there. We have deers, we have animals that are very friendly, no issues with hogs, anything like that. We live with them, they live with us. It will be a egregious loss, not only to us of having to lose the golf course. I came here in 2005 or 6. It was up and running. It's no longer there. We still have to deal with that issue. We still have to deal with the issue of golf course before we can even consider this project. So, a couple of issues. If you notice, I think this matter should be tabled for everybody to get a notice in regards to the next hearing in regards to this. I think this issue should be tabled for a period of time that a traffic survey is taken and our considerations are heard. I'm looking around this audience. There's very few of our residents, and probably many of them by my own hand and notice are even here today. I do not know who Mr. Collins was speaking about in our neighborhood, but I'm telling you, I'm a community leader there. I speak to our residents on a regular basis, and everybody's shocked and alarmed about this project. So we are totally opposed to this project. In whole or in part, and I think it needs to be reconsidered and revised. No mailing, traffic, other happiness, and other properties. I think I covered all the issues. Oh, sorry, you mentioned this was launched in 2005 for a townhouse approval in 2005. Well, you know, I was here in 2005, and right now it's 2016. And I can tell you the neighborhood, doubled in occupancy since the downturn in 2006, and since the economic downturn, we're kind of recovering from that. From the building of the school and the opening of the exit ramp. We're just kind of getting back on our feet there. We love our area, we love our projects. I think we have open hearts and open ears, but it is entirely and completely unacceptable. As this project is laid out, with only two egress points for an entire project for 180 residents, in addition to other residents coming back. So I ask you and I beg this commission to please reconsider our feelings are mostly please consider or have an opportunity, not just myself, but the other residents in the area to be duly noticed by mailing, maybe certified mailing. I'm not sure it's going to cost anymore, but the people need to have an opportunity to speak, and only a less than a third is only here tonight. And I can tell you, speaking to the residents, being all over Lindsay, being an entire area, as a community leader from the project in Batanzas Woods, we would like to see the return of Batanzas Golf Course or some project return before is there any consideration for townhouses, and also, like I said, a traffic survey and given the value of single homes that we're looking at here today. Listen, thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, you'll have to forgive me. This is my very first night as chairman of this board. When we have public comments, they're limited to 3 minutes. I apologize for not announcing that before we started. However, in as much as we started, those folks have gone more, but I'm going to hold you to 3 minutes going forward. Anything? Anybody else? Come on up. Thank you. Any other speakers? Sir.
Request as much as not consider this write off, but make some adjustments. If there's no way to stop it, at least consider the size of the lots. The lots now are not that small. If you try to jam that many houses in there, it's not going to work. Now, I know developers like to make as much money as they can, sell as many lots as they can. Just, you know, developers know they're going to progress. That's just business. But we have to live there. And I think it could be some adjustments made, or it could be less traffic. It has to have more arrangement for people to get in and out of there. It has to have a light down at the end of the environment before you change that. Those types of things. Safety for children. There are a lot of kids in there. A lot of young children there. If you get this much traffic, it's not going to be a safe thing for young people. So I would suggest that you at least think of it. I know we can't, it's your choice. At least let us know, let you want to let you know that it's a great concern. I've lived here 8 years. I retired, and I thought this would be a nice place to retire. Now I'm going to think of it. I can't live there. I can't get in and out of my pride. But now I have to be careful about getting in and out of my pride. What would happen if they had 108 more people coming in and out of there? Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Seeing no one else approaching the podium, we'll close the public hearing portion of the hearing, and let's talk a little bit about some of the things you heard. Mr. Hoover or Mr. Cullis, whichever would prefer.
I'm happy to address a few of them. I took some notes here. We are required to do the
additionally, the land development code does not require this to be advertised in the newspaper. However, planning staff went ahead and did run an ad on that about 2 weeks ago.
So it was advertised, the signage was put in place, and the mailings were done?
Yes, sir. We followed state law, and what Mr. Hoover said, we went ahead and put an ad in the paper that we went above and beyond what
okay.
the code says.
There is a requirement at Platt to do a traffic study, which we'll certainly do. There are several other resources on the Kansas Parkway. Apparently, is a neighborhood rather than which case, you know, probably a different approach. But again, there's less units than what could be built there today. Traffic's about the same.
And you said the number of units is 104.
The actual number is 108, is what we're asking for. Our plan has 104, and I might be open to voluntary.
But not 180.
Not 180.
Yeah.
No. There is, which we didn't mention, a requirement for us to dedicate and build a school bus stop. So we will have a bus stop for the kids. We are contributing to a sidewalk fund since those neighborhoods don't have sidewalks. So we'd like to contribute to the session. Happy to. I think those are my issues.
Thank you, sir. So you over to have anything to add?
City traffic engineer is here also, Sean Costello, if you have any specific questions that you can direct to him.
Okay. I think I heard what you said, but just do me a favor and say it one more time.
The city traffic engineer is here this evening. His name is Sean Costello, and so he can address the traffic concerns if you like.
If you'd like to.
Sitting right back here.
Not sure he wants to. But just tell us a little bit about what's going to happen in terms of a traffic study. I know you haven't done one yet.
No, they haven't done one yet. But when they come in, you know, and for something more formal, they will lock. At that point in time, they're going to lock down what the actual land use will be. So whether or not this is going to be a single-family residential subdivision, or this could be one of those subdivisions that gets built that's age-restricted, you know, 55 and over and, you know, stuff like that. From that point, then we'll have a better idea of what is actually going to happen and how much traffic will actually be generated based on
the
that.
Amount of additional traffic that would be generated
yes,
by
sir.
A project of that size.
Yes, sir.
And if it changes the level of service of the roads, that's a responsibility of Mr. Cullis's organization to resolve.
Yes.
Quick question. The existing multifamily end use that is approved, as an anecdotal statement, would that create greater or less traffic counts than this proposed project?
That all depends on what the land use is, what the actual land use that they choose, because there are differences between different kinds of communities. Like, for example, if this was just a regular single family dwelling unit subdivision, your trip generation is significantly higher than if you have something that's, for example, a 55 and older community.
My question is in reference to the existing approved use for multifamily. Would that typically create more traffic counts as opposed to this current project? I know you don't have the current numbers in front of you, but anecdotally.
I don't have the numbers in front of me, but generally, townhomes and apartments and those type of multifamily uses generally create less traffic than your single-family dwelling units do.
But 108 single-family homes as opposed to 148 housing units, be they townhomes or single-family homes, which one do you think is generating more traffic?
It depends on the trip generation rate that's assigned
okay.
to that use.
Okay.
had a question.
Yeah, I'm going to bring it, I was going to bring it back to the board for discussion anyway. So go ahead, Sylvia.
I was wondering if there's any wildlife mitigation included in the plan.
What we require is a study, an environmental study, and Denise Bevan, our environmental planner, that comes in with the rezoning that this property is looked at for threatened endangered species and type of assessments. And if the project or any future project is approved and the platting process, because we're just talking about the rezoning right now, the next steps would be a preliminary plat application and then a final plat application. And during that time, we would also require a threatened endangered species study and defining those wetlands and making sure that it meets our land development code and that any threatened endangered species on the site would follow state regulations and our land development code.
There seems to be some discrepancy between the amount of outreach that Mr. Cullis and others have said was done and what the community feels was done. How are we assured that there is a listing of these folks and that they are being notified properly?
You know, and maybe Katie can speak on this too, but we, you know, with our land development code, we want to make sure that we're consistent throughout, you know, every application. And with our land development code, we spell out that we want to be consistent with state law and those type of things. So, you know, we're following that process. And, you know, community leaders, obviously, you know, they're here. They found out that the meeting's taking place, and you know, some of our notification requirements are 300 feet from the property line. And a lot of times what we experience, I mean, we've had auditoriums full when the notices go out only 300 feet to those neighbors, and you end up getting a lot more folks. But we're just specifically following, you know, our code when it comes to that notice.
Mr. Chairman, it does have to do with consistency, and you know, we have a code for a reason, and obviously, as you know, and so we need to adhere to it for every single project the same way.
Yep. Okay, other questions for the board? Pete? Jade?
I have one question. I heard the golf course mentioned several times. I just want to make sure that this property is not part of the golf course.
Absolutely not part of the golf course, sir.
Golf course over there?
Any other questions from the board?
I'd like to ask Katie.
Go right ahead.
Katie, how long on approval of a zoning before someone develops it or decides to develop it? Is there a length of time that ends and they have to come back to the city?
Yes. Every agreement usually provides for termination in itself, just about. And in this case, generally you have to begin construction within 5 years.
I misinterpreted the question. I think what Glenn is talking about is the rezoning that was done in 2005.
Right.
Is there
multifamily dwelling? Someone had to put that request in.
Yeah, that was a PUD.
A request by a contractor or something, correct?
Yes.
To build, and they got the rezoning. My question is, yes, if they don't start within 5 years, then that should be...
It technically expired. However, because they retained, the code provides that they revert back to the PUD zoning, and because they have a PUD zoning, they're entitled to something, and arguably it would be the same amount of units that they were entitled to under the PUD agreement, even though the PUD agreement expired, but you still have a PUD zoning. So there has to be something associated with that. A PUD zoning is meaningless in and of itself. Does that make sense? So even though the PUD agreement, it's just a quirk in the way PUD zoning works. Typically, a zoning lasts, basically it's permanent. but a PUD zoning agreement has an expiration, this one did have an expiration in it, but because there were units assigned to it, then it still retains those units, even though all of the terms of the PUD agreement have expired.
Well, if they have expired, I don't see where, unless he reapplies for an application to put those condominiums in there, he hasn't reapplied to put them in there.
That's
right. They asked for that to be done 11 years ago. They were going to build this multifamily, and 11 years ago it was approved for that PUD to be done. Now that PUD wasn't done. It sounds like, don't take me wrong, there's a money situation involved here.
Ms. Reichman, may I just for a second? Basically what happened is when we first did the PUD, then we did the citywide rezoning that changed it to NPD. So therefore, then that time expired, so it did revert back to the original document, PUD, that allowed them those entitlements.
Well, how long?
It reverts back to what their original zoning was, and that's PUD.
What was the original zoning then for that PUD?
PUD. When we became a city, it's PUD. It went from PUD to NPD when we did the citywide rezoning. It expired, and then it reverted back to the PUD. And now what the applicant is proposing to do is a master plan development agreement of doing single-family lots instead of multifamily.
So, and to make sure I understand it for everybody here as well, if we don't approve this MPD, then the applicant is free to turn around and file a request for a new MPD following the old PUD rules, and we would be forced to, we'd be required to grant it.
Well,
I mean, we don't have PUD zoning anymore, so
no, but I mean the
we would you know, we've already zoned them MPD.
Yeah.
So they would come in and seek, essentially, just as sort of an administrative matter, they would convert their PUD to an MPD.
Exactly.
Agreement.
But they would get the components in that MPD of the original PUD.
That's right.
And we would be required to provide to approve that.
That
okay.
Yeah, essentially.
So,
just to piggyback off of that, the existing entitlements are going to run with the land, as far as number of units, correct?
Correct.
Unless this is changed, so it's a either or situation with respect to either a multifamily end use or this single family end use, which is more consistent with the neighborhood.
Correct.
Okay.
One other point. This is not the final approval process. It's the applicant's application, if it's approved by us, goes to the city council. So those of you who feel that we're making a mistake if we do approve this, understand that you have another opportunity to voice your opinion to the city council in total. Yes.
If I may just take a moment, because I know we have some new members, and it can be very difficult to hear citizens' concerns and feel that maybe you're not able to completely take those into account because your hands are somewhat tied by the law, by the code, and that is in fact the case, because this is a rezoning. It's not a policy decision. You don't have the ability to come in here and decide what you think is good and right and the best thing. You know, maybe you wish you did, in which case you need to run for elected office. But what you're able to do pursuant to what the courts have laid out is you are to review the evidence that's been presented to you. And if you have evidence of traffic issues in the form of testimony by traffic engineers, then you could weigh that. But if you just have a concern about traffic, then that is not competent substantial evidence. Just wanted to be sure you knew your standard is to weigh the competent substantial evidence and not just what you hear from people about their concerns.
Anything more from the board?
Yeah, I don't want to contradict the traffic engineer, but 148 townhomes, when I was traffic engineering, generates two cars per home entering and exiting. Take that times 148. That is a large increase over 104 homes of two cars per home. Correct?
Well, engineer? It doesn't exactly work like that. You know, we have books that have the rates that we work off of a book that's called the ITE Trip Generation Manual, and the ITE stands for the Institute of Transportation Engineers. And these are rates that have been generated over, you know, 30 plus years of, you know, study of different land use. And they've studied single family housing, multifamily housing. They've even studied, you know, things like what type of trip generation that you get from a 55 and older community to shopping centers and schools and everything else. Without knowing specifically what the exact designation is going to be for these homes, or, you know, for whatever they propose, we cannot come up, you know, we don't know what exactly the impact will be. So, but just as an example, based on the ITE Trip Generation Manual, a single family dwelling unit, and that's just a standard home anywhere, so that's not age restricted or anything, is going to generate from 9 to 10 trips per day, compared to a multifamily unit, which is going to make anywhere in the range of like 6 to 7 trips per day. And even if you take it a little bit further, if you go into an age restricted community, that number even goes down a little bit more. So, you know, it just depends on what the developer plans on doing. You know, what their exact plans are. If this is going to be a single family subdivision with no age restrictions, then it's going to be based on a purse, you know, the higher rate. But if this is going to be an age restricted community, then they're going to get the lower rate. Hopefully that made sense.
Yeah, I think so. Put the two of you in a closet. Find it out.
It's,
yep. Anything more from the board?
It really sounds like we don't know how many houses are, what they're going to put in there.
Well, it's either going to be 108 or 104. Right? Well, yes, because we are approving 108. Mr. Cullis tells us tonight that the number currently is 104.
Because of gifting.
Pardon me?
Because of gifting to the city.
Yes. Am I accurate, Mr. Cullis?
Yes, sir.
Anything else on the board?
So there's no notice concerns. The mailing happened, and the city did the advertisement. And
I'm sorry, Jake.
The notice concerns that were expressed,
well, legally, from the city's point of view, we've done everything that we were required. Yeah. As a matter of fact, we were not required to advertise it, and we did.
No, that was my point.
In addition to that, there's a fairly substantial list of addresses to a letter that the developer sent to invite people to a neighborhood meeting, of which 21 neighbors did show up and have a conversation about it.
Okay.
Anything else? Then how about a motion?
I move to approve.
We have a motion. We have a second.
I'll second the motion.
Okay. Discussion? Any further? Eileen, would you call the roll?
Mr. Smith.
Yes.
Mrs. Lucas.
Yes.
Mr. Dolny.
Yes.
Mr. Scully.
Yes.
Mr. Davis.
No.
Mr. Lenhertz.
Yes.
Mr. Jones.
Yes.
Motion carries.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Number five in our agenda, an application for a Tier 2 68-unit, 70-bed, 45,952-square-foot memory care facility.
We probably should have tried it. We tried it. I hope it's the right walkthrough.
No, we'll find out.
Yeah, because that was the only thing. It's like, but it should be good.
Well, it'll be fun to see what happens.
Yes, it's ready.
The difference.
Okay. One is ready. I hope it's the right one.
Okay, great.
Oh, we'll have to discuss
after the meeting.
Well, not. At the meeting.
And then I'd like you to take part in it if you don't mind, because the other one knows the answer. Mr. Tyner.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. Right over here, Dave Freeman.
I'm sorry, Dave.
Hey, I have an emergency with a leak at one of the schools over here. I wonder if I could be excused.
A little, I have to wait. This is important stuff. You're excused.
All right, thank you.
Hey. So who's not having school tomorrow?
Did you really?
Mr. Tyner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ida Meehan, one of our senior planners, will do the staff presentation for a memory care facility. It will be solely memory care. This is, I guess, technically a redevelopment of an existing building, but Ida will provide the details.
Good evening. I'm here to present Watercrest Memory Care. It's an application for a technical site plan, Tier 2. The application number is 3127. The purpose of a technical site plan is to ensure that the site development complies with the development regulations and that development will occur in an orderly and efficient manner. The review outcomes are, we review this application and make a recommendation to the Planning, Land Development, and Regulation Board, and you recommend approval or denial. And the applicant, through this process, obtains a development order and can apply for a building permit. Just as a point of information, we actually have three types of site plan approvals. Tier 1 is administrative. Tier 2 goes before you, the Planning, Land Development, and Regulation Board. And a Tier 3 application would go before the Planning Board and the City Council. So because of the threshold of square footage, this is a Tier 2 site plan. The applicant is Watercrest Development. The agent for the applicant is Charlie Faulkner, and of course they have a team also. The address is 2 Corporate Drive, Palm Coast Parkway Northwest. And the site is 3.9 acres. And as Ray mentioned, it is a redevelopment request. The future land use is mixed use. The zoning is office 2. In terms of existing conditions, there's an office warehouse, approximately 17,000 square feet on the property currently. It was built in 1984. Access through the property occurs through Palm Coast Parkway and an easement south of the property along Corporate Drive. The proposed use is a 45,952 square foot, 68-unit, 70-bed memory care facility. And interesting enough, the proposed use will generate significantly lower trips. Just to summarize the project, again, it's 45,952 square feet that's being proposed through this facility. The maximum building height is 30 feet, 68 units, 70 beds. It includes state-of-the-art memory care and cognitive support therapies. Very special in that regard. On-site amenities, the site plan shows it includes two outdoor courtyards interior to the facility, so that the outdoor courtyards are self-contained within the building. The proposed application will generate approximately 50 employment opportunities. 43% of the site will be left open, and it includes 53 parking spaces. This is a color rendering of the proposed project as it'll look from Palm Coast Parkway. The applicant has worked very hard to achieve goals in terms of the amenities and the attractiveness of the proposed facility. These are the proposed building elevations for the Watercrest Memory Care facility, north, south, east, and west. Again, you can see the articulation and the detail included in the building design. This is the proposed signage shown in the site plan package itself. And this is the proposed site plan. I don't know if I can get this to work, but you can see the two interior courtyards.
Do that.
Yeah, very good. That's what I want to do. So, staff finds that this application is consistent with the Land Development Code and the Comprehensive Plan. The applicant has met all comments. Our recommendation to the Planning Board is that application number 3127, Tier 2 Technical Site Plan Review for the proposed Watercrest Memory Care Facility be recommended for approval. That concludes my comments at this point. Charlie Faulkner is here representing the applicant, and representatives from the applicant's team are also here and have a short presentation.
Mr. Faulkner.
Can you hear me okay?
Sure can.
Well, first of all, thank you. And just go back on the record and thank your staff. It's wonderful to work with the whole process. I don't think I'm going to take any more time. I did a really good job making the presentation and explaining the project. I would introduce the project engineer who's here with us tonight, Todd Howard, and Mark Chilcott, who is the vice president of development for Watercrest. And between the three of us, we'll try our best to answer any questions or concerns that y'all may have. And I think Mark would like to make a few comments when it's appropriate, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, sir. This is not a public hearing requirement, right? Or is it?
Yes, sir, it is.
Oh, it is. Okay, I'm sorry. Does anyone have any questions for the staff or the applicant?
I do.
Sylvia, go right ahead.
I note that you're anticipating 50 to 70 jobs. I, of course, as in any community, we're always concerned about where you'll be pulling that kind of personnel from. Will you be offering those employment opportunities to people in this community? Or do you anticipate you're bringing people from outside of this community?
Good evening.
If you can come up to the podium, please.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Mark Chilcott. I'm the Vice President of Watercrest Senior Living Group. And Watercrest Senior Living Group owns the entity Watercrest Development that is here with you tonight. And Watercrest Senior Living Group will also own and operate the facility. And so as it relates to your question, we always start within the community first. And in fact, we've already been doing our research in this community in the greater area and making sure that there is qualified staff available in this area. So we will draw first from this area.
Thank you so much.
Any other board members have any questions for the staff or the applicant? Okay, we're going to open it for public comment. Anyone who wishes to speak, please approach the podium and just give us your name and your address. Seeing no one approach the podium, we close the public hearing. And
there's a lady.
I beg your pardon. Good evening.
Dominique, Life and 34 Lolita Path. I have a question with this, with the memory care. Will you be dealing with patients with Alzheimer's and dementia? Because I do have a grandmother who has dementia.
I believe that's...
Hold on, Ida. They asked the questions to the board, and then we'll take all the questions at the end.
Oh,
sorry.
She looked at
that's
me.
Okay.
We'll get you an answer.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Any other public comments or questions? Okay, so this time we will actually close the public hearing portion and go back to the board for a discussion. But does any of the applicants or the staff respond to that question?
That was an excellent question, actually. Mm-hmm. We are a residential community, so our residents live there 24/7. And so our care is on site and it's with the residents in that community. I could share a little bit about Watercrest. If you'd like to know a little bit more about Watercrest, I was encouraged to do that, but only if it's at your pleasure.
Go ahead.
Okay, great. Watercrest was actually founded in 2012. It's co-owned by Mark Borkovich and Jody Williams. And I don't know if you're ever curious, if you have the opportunity to get onto our website, it'll do a much better job than what I can present here tonight. Mark and Jody had a passion, and they felt a calling, and took a leap of faith. And when they started Watercrest in late 2012, they did really wanting to raise the bar in the industry, raise the bar not only in the facilities that are out there and especially in the design and making them a place where people would just love to live and enjoy the season of their life, but also raise the bar in the level of care, and the operations, and what is happening there with the residents. Mark and Joni, prior to that, came from an organization called Harbor Retirement Associates, and they were CEO, CFO, and staff there. And so they had a lot of depth, but they felt a desire to break off and do something new. Watercrest right now, when we started our development activities in 2013, we were very, very blessed in how things have flowed. And so today we have four facilities open, two under construction. This will be our third under construction. And then we've branched into other states right now, Georgia, Virginia, South Carolina. And we have a number of properties that are in the pipeline for 2017. So we've grown, but we've grown not because we're responding to need. So as it relates to this facility, we'll take the opportunity, they say a picture is worth a thousand words, to show a quick flip, which is a walkthrough of what's inside the facility. So you're looking at a box on the outside and the site plan. We like to give people what it's going to look like inside. And if you wouldn't mind doing that, please. Thank you.
I think I just seen my future.
Me too.
Yeah, that was slick.
Unfortunately.
Caring not just for the residents there, but caring for the families, 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 the That to me is distinguishing. That to me is absolutely amazing. And it's a passion. We're so glad to be able to come to your community, to become part of your community, to become part of the fabric to serve your residents here. And we thank you, and we thank staff. And
thank you, sir. Okay, let's come back to the board. Any board members have any questions for the staff or the applicant? I'm sorry, someone?
No, I saw a hand raised in the audience, so yeah, I just wanted to bring it to your attention.
Yeah. Yes, Ben. This would be a question you might want to grab the gentleman from Watercress with after the meeting and ask him that question. It's certainly beyond the purview of what we're doing. We're only approving a site.
Right.
You know, what his business is what his business is.
And right, I understand that, but also I would like to know if it's going to be government granted or if it's going to be self-pay. And if it's going to be self-pay, then we understand too what type of employees.
Yeah, that's another question for that's his business model, not ours. You might want to have that conversation with him after our meeting.
Okay.
Any questions from the board for the applicant or the staff?
Will it be any type of fencing or security? I mean, if these for the patients, will there be any type of fencing or security for your patients?
The entire facility is secure there. And as you walk into this, it'd be good to have the floor plan back up, but as you walk in, you're entering into a secure area that enters right into that large, what we call the market street, where you saw the clouds and the tree and the businesses up there, and our residential communities go from there. That is all secure for the safety of personal safety of our residents. As Ida said, the courtyard that you saw us go on into is an internal courtyard. Nothing exterior, but that is internal up there. So no fencing, but fully internally secure.
Thank you.
Entertain a motion.
I move to approve.
Second.
Irene, would you call the roll?
Mr. Smith.
Yes.
Mrs. Lucas.
Yes.
Mr. Dolning.
Yes.
Mr. Jones.
Yes.
Mr. Scully.
Yes.
Mr. Davis.
Yes.
Mr. Mr. Lenhertz?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Congratulations. On to item 6 in our agenda, special exception to allow a tattooing, body piercing, and other body art at 25 Pinecone Drive, Palm Coast. Mr. Tyner?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is for a special exception. And just for some of our new members, kind of what a special exception is, within our land development code, our land use category, we have what we call special exceptions for specific land uses, such as a tattoo studio, which is being proposed in our commercial 2 zoning district. Special exception, we don't have a whole lot of them, but those are uses that, you know, yeah, may be appropriate for this land use and may not be appropriate for this land use. So the special exception has specific criteria within our land development code, and you know, Ida will have the details behind what our code requires as far as meeting the special exception criteria. It's very typical for some special exceptions that you can place specific standards or guidelines. For example, not associated with this, but you know, a special exception for a dog kennel in a CO2 district where you have a neighborhood in back. Maybe you want a, you know, a landscape buffer to buffer the noise a little bit. So those are the type of things that you can do with a special exception. This one, when it comes to tattoo studios, tattoo parlors, I'm going to ask Katie to also provide a little bit of introduction on tattoo parlors, because there was some recent legislation, laws, I guess, that passed regarding studios. But before that, I will say that we are, you know, city staff, once Ida does analysis, we are not recommending any, you know, special conditions. We are recommend approval, but with that, and it's also in your staff report, but, you know, Ida will give the presentation, but first, Katie, a little bit more introduction.
The courts have held that tattoo parlors are a First Amendment use, the same as any kind of free speech. It's considered to be art. So the courts will look very strictly upon any restrictions on tattoo parlors.
Okay. So we're at the point where there is
Mr. Ida will provide this type of presentation.
And then we have the applicant. Yes.
As discussed, this is a special exception request for a tattoo studio. It's referred to as application 3192. Our land development code actually identifies the use as tattoo, body piercing, and body art use. However, it doesn't define that use. As mentioned, special exceptions are uses that may not be appropriate in a zoning district, but subject to appropriate limitations, may be acceptable. Basically, the special exception approval criteria is that it's consistent with the land development code and compatible with the surrounding neighborhoods. This particular application is... the request is at 25 Pinecone Drive, Unit 3C. It's located within an existing professional, commercial, and office condominium complex. The proposed location is surrounded by a large core of non-residential and urban uses, and the area is largely built out. Under the annotation is the location where the super car wash is being constructed at the moment. So right there. And, you know, that's right north of the Catholic Church. Again, this shows the proposed location at 25 Pinecone Drive. South of this location is Cypress Point Parkway. And it's really at the northeastern corner of Pinecone Drive and Cypress Point Parkway. a future land use is mixed use. The zoning is commercial too, general commercial zoning. In terms of the property characteristics and access, this is a photo of the condominium complex. Again, it's well established. It's a compliant site plan. There's a number of professional uses within the existing building. The access is off this internal drive, right off Pinecone Drive. These are some additional photos of the existing commercial and office retail complex. Some of the existing uses within this building are hair salon and counting service and orthodontist office. Just an example of some of the uses within that building. Again, this is the entrance to the complex off Pinecone Drive. That's the existing monument sign. So in terms of our land development code findings, we find that it is not, this lists the criteria, and our finding is that it's consistent with the public interest. It is consistent with the comprehensive plan. There's no anticipated financial hardship being asked of the city in terms of this request. If licensed, the use does not create a public hazard or nuisance, and the applicant is licensed by the Florida Department of Health for this proposed use. And that licensing is a standard that we accept. It's generally consistent with the requirements of the Land Development Code, and perhaps most importantly, the applicant has found in staff's view, a very appropriate location for this use, given the fact it is built out, it is surrounded by office, commercial, and retail uses. It's not in the vicinity of a neighborhood. It's within an existing building that's code compliant. So again, our findings are that it is compatible because there is an appropriate location for this request. The infrastructure in the building is available now, and it will bring a new business to this community. The applicant, Dustin Singleton, has notified as required by the Land Development Code, he has conducted the necessary notification for this request, and we've received no inquiries or adverse comments in terms of this application. Therefore, application 3129, in staff's view, complies with the requirements of the comprehensive plan and the requirements of the Land Development Code and special exception criteria, and staff is recommending that the Planning Board approve the requested special exception use, application 3129. Again, the applicant, Dustin Singleton, is here. And if you have any questions, I'm available.
Does the applicant wish to make a presentation?
My name is Dustin Singleton. I'm formerly from Boston, New York, and my family moved here 4 years ago. And I've just been trying to find a proper location to open a business. I found it in Pinecone. I love the town, I love the city. I think I'll be able to do great. I'll be able to employ six tattoo artists, body piercers. This is something that's been going on since the 20th century. And I think it'll be great here in this town.
Great. Thank you. Ida, didn't we do this just recently, a few months ago?
I thought it was last year for that two-story building.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, I think we did that for two. Yeah.
We did the same thing.
That was a ways. No, I think that was. Yeah.
It was last year, right?
I think it might have been longer than that.
Yeah, I think it was 2 years ago.
I'm getting scared. I remember that stuff.
It was 2 years ago. Was it?
Okay. Anybody questions from the board?
Do you own the condo unit, or are you renting it out? And are you
doing the build out is on you or the owner?
It's on me.
Okay. Don't want to use the term having skin in the game lightly.
Pete? Sybil?
No, I think it's great.
Sir? No, very good. Public hearing. If you'd like to approach the podium, speak on behalf or in opposition to the question at hand, you're welcome to approach the podium. Seeing no one approach the podium, we close the public hearing portion of the agenda. And anything further from the board? Any discussion?
No, I move to approve the special exemption.
I just have one question. Are you going to have employees?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and you'll ensure that they're licensed as well?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Good. Go ahead, Chris.
I move to approve the special exemption.
Second.
Hey, Irene?
You're really fast.
Fast.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mrs. Lucas?
Absolutely.
Mr. Dolny?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Mr. Scully?
Yes.
Mr. Davis?
Yes.
Mr. Lenhartz?
Yes.
Motion carries, sir.
Congratulations. Good luck to you.
Congratulations. Good luck in business.
Got a better response than the folks in the Tanzas.
Taking them first.
Need you to this. Got to attract some younger people to the town.
Very good. Do you have anything else to discuss?
I have to get, let's see.
This is time.
Doing? What did you say?
That's a project.
Man.
I
got
to get a copy.
Is everyone here? Is everyone going to be here the 20th? Looks like we will be having a
couple.
I know. Yes, we're busy. Yeah. Our next planning board meeting is scheduled on the 20th, so please let Irene know. December.
This is for the office.
Yeah.
December.
December 20th. Yes.
Yeah. Santa Claus going to be.
It is. Yeah. We've got. We're just let you know. We're probably going to have some items on the 20th. If not, I'll let y'all know. So. Other than that. I welcome our new members.
Chris has a motion on the floor. Is it seconded?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Sure.